This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Andy Schechter is somebody who wants to be one. Hi, Andy.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I am living the dream, as always. How are you?
Well, you're running for Senate, living the dream, but boy, I'll tell you, it's some dream.
I think it's a very complicated matter because of the scope of representation and the fact that there aren't that many, right?
Right, exactly. And, you know, you got the House, there's, you know, 50, 60 per state, and then in the Senate, they only have two per state. And again, it's the 6-year term too. So you've got a lot of plans that you can make and a lot of things you have to do, and you have to really be committed to it. Whether you're part of a team or whether you're the actual senator, the whole team, it's a team effort.
What makes you interested in the seat that is currently held by Bob Casey? Why do you think that he needs to be replaced?
Well, the point right now is we have a president in the White House. You can love him or you can hate him. It's your choice. I happen to like him. I know the guy personally, and he needs his support in order to get anything done. Even if you look back to Barack Obama's 8 years, a lot of the things that Obama tried to accomplish weren't accomplished because there was a stalemated a Congress. And if you believe in the freedom of society and the Constitution and you're reasonably conservative, you're going to want to swing that picture a little bit the other way. I kind of came into the picture because I know a lot of people across the state, primarily in the western part of the state, and up here in the Luzerne County area in Columbia County, and thought I'd have a chance if no one else, comes into the picture that wanted it. So I figured I'd give it a shot, and we'll just, see what happens. But it's very important to have a representation of not just the party, but of the people. And that's what we're trying to do now. You've seen a lot of this movement across the country, what's called the America First or America's First or Americans First. There's a lot of websites and Facebook pages and groups basically trying to put the interest of the people in. And in general, that's all the people. When I look at the perspective of various things, I look at it from everyone's perspective. And just as an example, if take healthcare, for instance, I've had a great conversation with a very liberal left-wing individual who was saying he would never agree with anything that I had to agree with. I said, well, I bet we agree with more than you would think. I said, well, take healthcare, for instance. My goal for healthcare is that everyone in the United States of America should be able to go to a doctor or a hospital and not fear for having to file bankruptcy or not having enough money in their bank account to pay for it, and there's no one going bankrupt and no one going sick and dying because they don't have insurance. And he looked at me and said, "But we agree with the same thing." Mm-hmm. So I said, "Well, let's work it backwards. I figured how we can come to a conclusion for that and a resolution."
Okay, so what is the resolution? Because saying it sounds great, but the actual doing seems to be a huge obstacle.
Well, that's it. Each obstacle, we have a lot of obstacles, and I actually treated the healthcare. I went down the path 3 years ago. I started doing some research on the economy. I'm an electrical engineer by trade and have a statistical background. So I started working and digging up the raw data and saying, where are we failing? Why? How did we end up with Obamacare? We ended up with Obamacare because there was no money to have universal healthcare that the the progressives wanted. The fact of the matter is you can't even have a free market system if people aren't paying into that system. So you have to trace it back to the economy. And actually, Donald Trump has seen that. He's starting to try to correct that situation. Just as an example, I just thought of this the other day, where I was looking for examples of how to explain this. I have a couple of friends, and one friend comes by, she goes, "You want some extra eggs? I got WIC, and I get like 3 dozen eggs every week, and I always have a couple dozen extra." So, you know, figure 1 dozen of eggs for one person, and you figure it per month, and, you know, it's $1, and then there's a million people on WIC, that's $1 million, and then you figure out over 10 months, that's $10 million, over the 5-year term is $50 million, and if they have two kids, there's $100 million just for WIC you've saved if you reduce the benefits to something that's manageable. So in other words, don't take away benefits, just make sure that people are getting what they need and not an excess like that. But that's just one example. We need to get people back to work. We need to address the opioid and the drug crisis, because people can't work if they're on drugs and they won't pass a drug test. And if people aren't working, you can't do anything. So that's the first step, fix the economy. In fact, if you look at it as far as the general statistics, when you actually go back to it, I wrote a book on it, the United States, the state of the economy, the failure of healthcare in the U.S., it's called, and that was a 3-year effort. It's actually a companion book to the lecture that I do, and you actually, believe it or not, if you look at the actual workforce, it breaks down to about a third of the people actually working in this country that are considered the workforce, and only 62% of that workforce is actually working. So there's a big gap in the people working versus other countries where they have, say, universal health care, where they have free market care that works, where 80 to 90% of the workforce is working. In Japan, for instance, half the population is in the workforce up to age 65. And of that, 98% are employed. Big difference between Japan and the United States. I know it's a smaller country, but we need to bring our statistics up and get people back to work.
How?
What's that?
How? How do you get them back to work?
People.
Yeah, how do you get people back to work doing something that they believe is valuable enough for them to leave a benefit that they have? Because a lot of people, you've probably heard these stories, Andy, a lot of people get benefits, and if they go to work, they're going to end up losing, going backwards by working. How do we stop this?
Absolutely. Well, you have to encourage by discouraging. And I was actually, many years ago, I was out of work for a long time, and I was actually on public assistance. And I, like you say, there's a big drop off. It's like, you know, wham, it just drops off the end. And what you need to do, first of all, I think you need to restructure the poverty level. Has to be rewritten the way it is, because right now it just cuts off. It should be a staggered amount up to a much bigger amount, because people are in need of that, of assistance, up to maybe twice what they're getting now as far as the poverty level. And the other thing you need to do is to reduce benefits accordingly, so that there's not a drop off like that people say, gee, I'm starting to struggle. I've been on it so long, you know, if you're healthy and you're active and you can work, you should be working. There should be incentive to go back to work, or benefits will be reduced accordingly. I personally don't want to see anyone suffering, but neither do I want to see anyone, you know, slacking the system. It has to be much closely monitored. One of the things that Donald Trump has actually done is he's gone and he's put restrictions on this Lifeline phone service, which is a very costly service provided to the poor. And the people are actually on that service. I knew someone who was on it for 4 years. They actually called them every year saying, look, I'm working now. I don't need this anymore. And they wouldn't take them off of it. And they're actually cutting that down. I think he's cut $50 or $100 million off that right now, just by getting people off the benefits that they shouldn't be getting. But I think a more structured system that's more of a linear curve. It's the benefits you get, and people that don't belong in that system should be encouraged to go back to work. But again, a big chunk of that is the drug addiction problem that we have, which has to be addressed. So there's a number of problems. It's not just this. It's not a very simple solution to
it.
You know, one size fits all.
Got it. Now, yesterday I was in an event that was a notation of opioid awareness deaths, and I spoke to somebody there who talked about legislative remedies and the money that it may take in order to get people from addiction to work. Somebody suggested that rehabilitation at 28 days. I mean, and that's really, if you get 28 days, it's kind of a big deal because your insurance company really wants to cut you off much sooner. This person suggested that we are just not allowing people to have enough time to recover. How do you see that?
Well, I'm not a, a physician, and my background isn't medical, so I can't tell you what a recovery period would be. But I certainly would want to know the statistical results for that to make sure that people are getting the time that they deserve. And I think that somehow the manufacturers of those drugs that have caused that addiction should be part of the solution. They should provide either a free or some sort of service to get people off those drugs that they got them on in the first place. And, you know, I think they're actually more important even in the hospitals and the other facilities. That I think that, you know, the manufacturer, you look at asbestos, you've got giant lawsuits over asbestos and other products. Why not over the opioids? You know, that there should be a resolution from the people that make that product that's killing people.
So you think that if that was approached, then there would be the kind of money that we would need to do a more longer-term treatment for these individuals?
Right, exactly. And I think that, you know, hospitals and doctors that overprescribe should be held liable as well as far as providing for the resources for recovery. It's got to come from the private sector because, you create a problem and you need a resolution to that problem from the people that created it. And that's typically the way our legal system works.
It seems to me that you really want to go and use statistics, kind of like when the guy from the Oakland Athletics wrote the book about small ball and trying to find these ways to make a winning team by using actual hard numbers. Am I in the ballpark on this one at all?
Well, very few people have. The last politician that I'm aware of that actually looked at the statistics was Ross Perot, and he was right on the money. People laughed at him, but you know what? When you look at it over the years, and you go back, if you look at back to 1970 is where our problems started. 1970 is when the public welfare system started. There's actually a whole set of occurrences that occurred at the same time. We probably don't have time to go in depth into that, but you can, you know, my book goes into that, but and my lecture goes into that. But it's definitely looking at the statistics. If you look back and see what's happened, you know how to resolve the problem. But if you don't look at your past history, you're just going to play it over and over and over again, like all the Facebook memes are saying these days.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you believe that some people are desirous of having these problems for their own benefit?
Well, I don't know if they start out that way, but it certainly becomes a crutch. It becomes let's go out and, you know, have a beer tonight and collect our check tomorrow. And if you look at it, I mean, I don't know if you're aware of the statistic, but one of the statistics is that of all the Americans today, 46% of Americans, of every single American, currently has universal health care. That is in the form of either Medicaid, WIC, Medicare, VA. You can go down the line, but it comes out that just about 46% of every single American has that. From the medical perspective, it's going to be hard pressed. That's why you see people rioting in the streets over this. Nobody wants to lose their free universal health care that the progressives tout so much. And in reality, if you look at the fact, as a crazy right wing Republican, you might laugh at me, but I look at universal health care versus free market, and you know, both work out the same. If you look at in European nations and some of the Asian countries, and look at what the a lot of their universal care is, it's worse than what we have as Medicare or as even our ACA plan. They're paying more than we are.
Who? Where?
Well, if you look at Spain is one of them, where they actually have they only pay 80% of your medical. You don't pay your bills. They take it off taxes, but when you go to the hospital, they're paying 80%, just like Medicare. Now you go to Japan. I think Japan is one of the ones that pays 100% of everything. Believe it or not, one of the best systems, not necessarily the best health care, but one of the best systems is in Cuba, where everything's paid for and everybody gets everything paid for. But they're all different. I mean, these plans, you can't just say universal health care, or you can't just say free market. You have to have a plan that's going to actually be affordable. And not all universal health care is truly affordable, and especially when you look at the taxation rates for it. So you have to take that whole thing into consideration when you create a plan. What's the cost of the actual plan, and then what's the cost of your out of pocket total, and then is it affordable?
Okay, one more question, then we got to fly. You say that you sure. You know Donald Trump. Talk about your relationship with him, and is he, in your estimation, doing a good job? Because you know he's been kind of savaged in many quarters. What do you think about
right.
him? Yeah.
I can give you the 1 minute version of Donald Trump. I worked with Donald Trump many years ago in the working on his on his boat, one of his boats, and also on his casino in Atlantic City. And he's a really nice guy. I mean, he would invite people to his parties afterwards, when even his contractors, and he was a really great person. Typical, you know, businessman, had political interest all along, as to, you know, always had his 2 cents in for the political aspect. And I tell people, Donald Trump is Donald Trump. You're not going to change his attitude. He's not going to stop tweeting. He's not going to stop making a fool of himself. But you know what? He's done a lot right now. A lot of people don't look at that. A lot of the media doesn't see that. But when you see the amount of reductions he's reduced in the public assistance, he's reduced over $100 million, almost $200 million, including that Lifeline program he's been cutting people off of that don't belong on it any longer. He's done a lot. He's being stymied by the Congress. But I think that if we get a decent Congress in there to help him out, if he slows down a little and listens to the members of Congress, I think he'd make a great president. He is doing a lot more than you see in the media, though.
All right, Andy Schechter, great to meet you for the first time today, and I'm sure we'll talk to you in the future as you stage a run for U.S. Senate, and we look forward to it.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you giving me the time on the air today. You have a great day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.